and welcome to the All by the Popcorn podcast. I'm Alessandra.
And I'm Emily.
And today we are talking about the movie Poor Things, nominated for 11 Oscars.
Oh, shit.
That's a lot of Oscars. And it's deserving. It's a Yorgos Lanthimos movie. It's weird, just like all of his other movies. But this one's weird and great. I love it.
We love Yorgos in this house.
Yes. He is always a very surrealist filmmaker, just never doing anything that you're expecting. And just kind of has that weird, like, gothic twist on everything that he makes, and I love it.
Yeah, yeah. His movies are a real vibe, and we all know how I am with vibes. Good vibes.
Absolutely. So this one came out not too long ago, so we got to both see it in theaters. So that was good. And I think I maybe saw one trailer for this before it. And so I was kind of a little bit afraid to see the movie because it looked so weird.
It did look really weird. I'm trying to remember. I probably saw a trailer for this. I feel like I remember seeing something, either like a trailer while I was watching another movie, or definitely seen some stuff online. So I don't think I knew exactly what this movie was about. I think I knew that it was like a Frankenstein retelling, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. before going. But I also listened to the audiobook.
Yes, you went the extra mile.
Gosh.
I got it for free as well from
my library had it. And so I got the audiobook, I think, literally the next day.
Yeah.
And started listening to it. And I think I finished it in, like, 4 days. And so I'm gonna have that to talk about along with the movie. So that's going to be real fun.
So the beginning of the movie is this blue scene where this woman is wearing kind of seemingly Victorian clothing and she falls off of a bridge and kills herself. And so yes. We don't know if that's like taking place later in the movie or prior, and it's in color.
So you don't see the person's face?
No, you do. It's just
you do.
You just don't know, like, oh, is this character going to eventually kill herself? And it turns out, no. Once you find out the real origin of Bella, it's actually the previous incarnation of her. But at the moment, we do not know, and that's in color, and then the movie's in black and white in the beginning.
Yes. I did miss the first, like, maybe 5
that's
minutes
right.
of the movie.
Yes,
because
right.
my showtime was while I was still working. So I clocked out and ran to my theater and definitely missed a little bit of it. But
that's what happens. There is just the shot of her falling off the bridge. And I think it's like the London Bridge. Or sorry, not the London Bridge, the Tower Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So she falls off and then it's like black and white. As I guess we're just like introduced. I think we're introduced to like the teacher, which is being played by Willem Dafoe, the professor, and he's kind of somebody who does anatomy. Very much himself looks like a kind of Frankenstein-esque person with like prosthetics all over his face. A little bit frightening looking.
Yes, definitely a little spooky. He's definitely got like some bumps and stitches and scarring, like mm-hmm. just all over him.
Yeah, he hires his student to, played by Remy, Yusuf, whose name is Max in the movie. He hires him to be like an assistant for him to document Bella's increasing like what is it, like, growth and, like,
intelligence.
Yeah, intelligence, all the things that she, her milestones that she is making. And apparently she's making many milestones every day. Like, her hair grows, like, a certain amount every day. And, like, she can add more words to her vocabulary every day. So it's, like, it's basically, like, she's a toddler. And we see her, Emma Stone, playing her as, like, a full-grown adult, but she's acting like a toddler. Like, she can't move very well. She kind of, like, you know, her arms are flailing around like a toddler's would. She throws tantrums. She's, like, waddling. Yeah, she waddles. She, like, peas, and she can only say, like, you know, a couple words. You know, it's very weird watching an adult playing somebody like this, and I was glad that it wasn't throughout the entire movie that she was acting like this. But it's, like, the progression is even more stark because she started out so just, like, totally not, like, totally acting like a toddler. Like, her brain was not developed enough, right? So you realize that, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, this is starting off very strange.
Yeah, and we learn fairly early on, so Baxter hires McCandles, Max McCandles, to work with him, and Max kind of goes, he starts to investigate, like, Bella's situation, and he comes across, like, the file of how Bella became to be.
Yeah.
And how she was the woman who threw herself from the bridge, and Baxter found her dead in the river, and she was pregnant at the time. And so to give the baby a second life, or give this being a second life, the baby's brain was put into Bella's head,
mm-hmm.
and that is how Bella was born. And that is why we kind of see her growing and getting more intelligent every day. It's because she is growing from an infant, basically.
Yep.
From an infant's brain.
And this is kind of, like, already, like, the tone of this movie is already starting to be hilarious. Like, Bella has her own things that she's doing that are very silly, but watching Max come into the story, like, McCandles coming into the story and, like, kind of questioning things, like, he's like, so, how did she become to be? And Baxter is like, oh, well, naturally, I would take the baby's head and put it in her head. I mean, obviously, I was gonna do that. And he's like, what? Like, no.
Yeah.
Because it's horrific, right? And you're like,
right,
okay. But, like, at this point, you've already seen how much love Godwin has for his, like, stepdaughter, basically his creation, Bella. Like, he, like, reads to her, and he treats her very kindly, and he doesn't get upset with her really at all. And it's kind of like a real father kind of daughter relationship.
Yeah, basically. There is, and kind of delving on the humor of it, like, just the conversations that Max and Godwin have. It's like, when Bella starts to get feelings for Max, or she starts to get feelings for the opposite sex, or just people in general.
Yeah.
Max is like, oh, well, didn't you make her for yourself? And he's like, no, I have too much paternal instinct now.
Well, also, he went on this really long, you know, yeah, he rant. Said that, but then he was like,
he did say
also, it would take all of the electricity in the entire city just to get me off once. So I don't think that that's even possible because I'm a eunuch. And it was
that statement does happen in the book. So
that
is said.
That's so funny.
That was very funny. And just a lot of, it's very situational humor in this movie, with Bella kind of uncovering things, and the way that she'll say something very, not out of pocket, but just very to the point.
Yep.
Like,
very straightforward. Yes.
I have a sexual desire. You have a sexual desire. We should have sex. And they're like, no, this is not in polite society.
Yeah. So she, like, just says that to other people too. She's like,
yeah,
well, I think you're really attractive. I'll have sex with you. And, you know, Waterburn's like, Wedderburn's like, no, 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 no. Like, it is really refreshing that they exist in this, like, you know, kind of Victorian-esque society where things are a little bit less spoken about. Things that the polite society is much more shielded, you know, it's guarded, and she is just out and proud, and it's great. It's refreshing.
Yeah, the world that the movie is in seems a bit more not real and kind of, you know, fantasy-like, where I believe in the, as I was finishing the audiobook literally today, she was writing a letter at the very end, and I think she dated it as, like, 1941. So obviously the things that happened before 1941, because this letter takes place kind of after, quite a few years, I think, after the events of the book, I believe. I can't remember what the starting date was, but she definitely said 1941 at the very end as she was writing some letter a couple years later.
Okay. Okay.
Interesting. So that's like the time period that the book was set in, but this world doesn't seem real.
No, it's not. It's all on stages. It's all very, it's very surrealist. It's like if Dolly and, like, James and the Giant Peach Universe had a baby. Like, it's so weird.
Was that Tim Burton?
Oh, yeah. Like, no. Like, the original James and the Giant Peach, you know? Like, totally, like, animated feeling. Like, the skies were just these really breathtaking, crazy skies that could never happen. You know, everything was so like warped and influenced by like real life in a lot of ways, but just like so wacky. And even like, you know, down to her clothing and everybody's clothing, it's just like really eccentric. She's always got these like humongous puff sleeves all the time that are just like really Victorian looking. So it's really fun.
Yeah. And she'll often be pairing like her, it'll kind of look like a puffy sleeved coat and like a frilly shirt, but then she'll have these really comfy looking like shorts that I really want a pair.
She had a couple different colors too. Like,
yeah,
it was so cute that she just wore these shorts all the time. It was like, she just had just amazing fashion. Like, so, I mean, just breathtaking fashion. It was just so much fun. Oh my God. Like, you think about a character, the who she is and like how her fashion evolves from being like childlike to adult woman and like sophisticated woman. It's just amazing.
Yeah, for sure. The costumes in this movie were really good.
Yeah. So she goes off because she discovers that she can, you know, get off and like make herself happy by masturbating. And it's like a big point in her turning point as becoming a teen. Like, you figure this out when you're a teen and then you're like, oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah. You kind of get a little sex crazy.
Yeah. She's sex crazy. And it's hilarious because you're like watching her and you're like, she's out of control. She acts like a teenager. And this new guy comes in, Duncan Wedderburn, played by Mark Ruffalo, who has this accent that is hilarious because Mark Ruffalo is American. And his accent is like this posh British, but like lazy, not even very good accent that just makes him sound insane. And he's like overly confident, supposedly rich. He's the lawyer that's supposed to help marry Max and Bella, but then he's just like, never mind, I'm gonna take advantage of Bella and just whisk her away with me to Lisbon.
Yeah, so basically the main difference with the book is the movie seems to take place mostly in London until she goes traveling, right? And the book takes place in Scotland. Like, everyone has a Scottish accent.
Wow.
And in the movie, Godwin, like, really, Bella's like a shut-in. Like, he will not let her go out,
Right.
really, except for like very, like chaperoned visits out, and she doesn't get any like social interaction. So she really only has Godwin and Max to kind of talk to. And I guess her lady's maid, I guess, except the maid like hates her, so you know she's not really talking to her. But in the book, when she's first created, Godwin does take her on like a world tour. So she does
Oh.
have like that experience, until she then comes back. And I guess that's when she's very early on, probably. Because then they come back, and in the movie, Godwin's really pushing Max to be like, "Oh, you like Bella, don't you? You should marry her." Where in the book, Godwin kind of doesn't approve of it at first. He's like, "Okay, well, just this could also just be a passing fancy. So maybe just like take a minute. Like don't immediately do this. Don't get married." And then in comes Wedderburn, which basically it's pretty much the same in the movie. He comes in and he kind of whisks Bella away, and she did escape. Like, she even said, like, there is the part where Godwin's like, "Bella came up to me and told me that she's running away tonight."
Yeah. It's hilarious. She's like, "I decided that I'm gonna leave in the middle of the night and sneak out. Bye." And Godwin like lets her go because although he's like, "No, you shouldn't do that," she's like, "I want to, and I'm my own person, so I'm gonna do it." And she's still very immature, but she's, you know, Godwin thinks that she's mature enough to go and explore and have like an adventurous time. And that's kind of how she sees it as well. She's like, "Well, I'm gonna go off. And then I'll come back and I'll marry Max." You know?
Yeah, he'll wait for me, right?
Yeah. After having all this sex, but like to her, it's not even like
It's a non-issue.
it's a
Like, it's
non-issue.
just
Exactly.
it's her figuring out herself as just living, like
Yeah.
figuring out herself as a sexual being, as a woman, as just a human, and exploring these feelings that she's having.
It's really, really great. Like, it's a performance that is just, it's really impeccable how she just goes from being a child to being like a full adult and like really grasping things in the screenplay, like allowing her to like use bigger and bigger words and like understanding more complicated concepts. It's really refreshing and great how much like personal agency she has towards herself, like her desires are the forefront. They're the thing that matter the most. Like you do when you're a teen, you know, everything is you're the only important thing and other people are like slightly less important, you know? So,
Yeah, it's you and your happiness and your wants and desires. If you see something and you want it, you take it.
yeah. It's great. She like goes off on her own and of course it just makes Duncan Wedderburn just like so angry. Like it's so funny. It's just he tries to like control her and he can't. He gets extremely frustrated with her and it's just I mean Mark Ruffalo is hilarious.
He was so funny. He was horrible, but he was so funny. Like, it just he was the perfect Duncan Wedderburn, because I could seriously, so I guess a really big difference between the movie and the book is that the book is really mostly from Godwin, Baxter's like point of view, and kind of Max as well. They glean information from letters that Wedderburn and Bella are sending them, like of what they're
Oh, wow.
doing, of where they're going, and what's happening.
Yeah.
So like, we are just getting what's happening from these letters and not really like seeing it visually,
Yeah.
which I tend to like better from the movie, obviously, because you know you couldn't really make a movie off of how the book was laid out. So it's just so funny, like, now here, because like Duncan is like the exact same from the book to the movie, and Mark Ruffalo did such a good job. Like, he's such an asshole, but he's
He
like he
really
was
is.
so perfect. Like, he was so good, and it was so amazing to see their interactions while they were, where'd they go to first? It was,
they go to Lisbon first.
Lisbon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, you know,
I, if you could even call that Lisbon.
It's not, it yeah, it's very... the fantastical version of Lisbon. It's like not yes. even.
Not real.
It's, yeah, it's like so fantastical. I love it. You know, she eats like food that she's never tried before and, you know, meets people that she's never. It's just, there's like. It's crazy. And not to mention in Lisbon, they just have a ton of sex, which she calls like the jumping dance or something. Like, what does she say? Like furious jumping.
Oh, okay.
Together.
Yes, there was different terminology between, it was like vigorous jumping or yeah. something, or aggressive jumping. In the book, she calls it wedding.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funnier that, when she's like, let's do vigorous jumping together or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. It's a lot more funny.
And there's a lot of it, too. Like, I think that if you went to see this movie and not really realizing how much sex was going to be in this movie, it's like the majority of the movie. And there is like...
Yeah.
There is so much of it. And there's also just like a lot of visual, like... like choices that like visual, like motifs throughout the movie. Like some things, like her original house has like windows in it and they look like, or like that the like later in the movie when she goes to the whorehouse, it's like got the windows look like penises, and like there's yes. things that look like vaginas everywhere. It's like penises everywhere. Like it's just very very overt a lot of the time.
Yes, and all of the imagery during the credits was all very genitalia like.
Oh yeah. And speaking of, there's like those little like title screens that tell you what city that they're in. And I guess just kind of seeing the like different phases of her life, and they're like these surrealist scenes that don't have anything to do with anything that's happened, but they're just kind of like,
yeah, where she's like jumping on the fingers and like, yeah. and just going like, it's so, they're so crazy. Like this movie yeah. was a trip. Like,
yeah,
this movie was trippy. It was insane.
It was trippy and so fun. Like just absolutely just the most fun you can have. Like it was just wacky. I loved it. Danny went with me. We were laughing the whole movie. Because she just says some crazy things. She meets... So then, like, after Duncan gets so upset with her, he's like, you know what? Get into this chest. And she's like, okay. And she yeah. just gets inside this chest, and then she gets out of the chest, and she's on a boat.
Yes, in a way of controlling her and how far she can go, he basically traps her on a boat, which in the book, this is the opposite. Mm-hmm. She does this to Duncan. She tricks him into going on a boat because he has a gambling problem. Like in their first couple months of their trip,
mm-hmm.
He's gambling a lot and he's just being really reckless with like their stuff. And so she's trying to get him to not do stuff like, and not be tempted by this type of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, again, like, the ocean looks like it should just have little jumping fish coming out of it. Like, it seriously looks like James and the Giant Peach.
And all the industrial things just look so sickly. Like, mm-hmm. this cruise ship just had, like, green smoke coming out of it, and it just looked so nasty.
Yeah.
And I think Godwin's house, like, had like a chimney or something, or some sort of exhaust coming out of his house, because you know he did crazy shit in his lab.
Yeah,
and that was like a gross color as well. Like it's just very, very gross.
And when he like burps, industrial. He like invented that burping machine, so that when he's like eating, yes. it'll like turn into a bubble.
Yes.
It's so that silly.
Specifically wasn't in the book, but at some point it was really scary, actually.
What?
I think they're at the dinner table. It's like a scene that kind of reminded me of the burping scene in the movie that happened in the book. He doesn't burp, but Godwin makes this noise like the shrill, like I think Max tells him something that makes him mad or makes him upset, and he like unhinges his jaw and
Oh.
like opens his mouth and makes this like horrific screech.
Oh God. That's. Oh my God.
So
Oh
that's what's
no.
in the book.
Oh, that's
So I was
so
like,
silly.
okay.
Oh my
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
It's, oh gosh, it's so weird. It's so funny.
While Belle is gone, he makes another baby human person,
Yes.
who is played by Margaret Qualley, but she does not progress as quickly as Bella did, for whatever reason. It just doesn't take. So she's basically in like toddler stage for like most of the movie.
Was it stated that she was also pregnant and her baby's brain was put into her brain, or they just got a baby's brain from somewhere else? I
It
don't think it was ever stated.
was not specific, but
Okay.
I think like Max was like, "What are you doing? Again, why'd you do this again?" It's just like it's so weird. They're just it's like, oh, okay, I guess.
Yeah. It makes sense he would do it in the movie because Bella's gone and he really misses Bella, but in the book he doesn't do that. He just doesn't. It's he's Baxter seems very a lot more scientific and a lot less feeling in the book. Like he's really like in the movie he's very matter of fact, but you do get those scenes and Willem is just so good at it. Like just being very emotional and paternal towards Bella. Which is really nice to see.
Also, like right at the beginning of the movie, you see the other creatures that he's made.
Yeah, like the
Like
duck rabbit thing
he has
or
switched out a
goat.
dog's head with a duck. So there's two versions. There's the duck with the dog's legs and the duck head or the goose head, and then there's
Yes.
the goose's body with the dog's head, and then there's a goat with a duck's head. And it's
Yes.
like they're hilarious. They're like these silly little creatures, and it just again, it's very inventive, and you get the idea that he's like a crazy mad scientist. So they're on the
Yes,
boat.
completely.
He's like trying to control Bella, but she meets people at dinner. These very delightful people that become her friends. It's
Yeah, it was like this older woman.
Martha von Kurtzrock, I believe, and then the guy is. What's the guy's name?
Harry Astley, right?
Yes,
Correct?
Harry Astley, Jerrod Carmichael. This woman who played her friend Martha was so funny. She was so delightful. She just, like, as soon as she started talking to Bella, like, brings up the fact that, like, having sex is great. And then Martha's like, yeah, I haven't had a partner in a while. And then Bella's like, well, I hope that you're, making yourself happy. Or something like that. And Martha's like all
Yes.
about it. She's so happy that Bella's so refreshing.
Yeah, and this is like a turning point kind of in Bella's growth. As she talks to these people, she kind of gets into learning more about the ways of the world, not just in traveling, but just in kind of how things work and how cruel the world can be. And the similar thing happens in the book. It's a lot more boring than I'd say the movie does it. The people she meets are just they really get into politics and they really get into some. It was very hard to concentrate sometimes during this book, just with
Really?
all the stuff they talked about. And it was, and this book is, I don't know how old this book is, but I'm sure a lot of it was very dated
Yeah, I want to
and just
know. I was going
very,
to ask
like,
you about that. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up.
yeah, I think.
Let's see. Who knows? It literally could have come out in the like 20s for all you know. Oh no. Okay.
That's very
Originally
true.
published 1992. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Love it.
Okay, so not that old, but
No,
old.
just like a casual 22 years old.
Yeah, just a casual,
Oh no,
just a
I'm
casual
sorry.
22 year old.
32 years old. What am I talking about?
Oh goodness, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the Oh, interesting. The cover of this book has like a man sitting on a couch with a young girl hugging him, and then a man hugging the young girl hugging him. But it's also in like a kind of interesting art style. Huh.
Oh. Yeah, I did the audiobook, so I just have this guy who's holding some wires. It looks like he's. And then there's just like a lady sitting down, like kind of like she's sitting getting like a physical, like at the doctor's office. Like, I don't know what this cord is that he's pulling, but it could be like a stethoscope or like a something. I don't know.
There's this review of it on this WordPress. It's a bookish bulletin. It says, "Poor Things by Alasdair Gray is a treat for fans of Fairy Tale, Frankenstein, and Lolita." Yeah.
Lolita.
Yeah,
Yeah.
because it's like the,
Yeah.
you know, taking advantage of a young girl, and then like her kind of like turning that on its
Oh.
head, you know? It's kind of
Oh,
like a,
I was thinking of the fashion style,
well, the
Lolita.
fashion style is based off of the book Lolita.
Ah. I see. That is a reference I did not connect.
Yes. And also, her style is kind of Lolita-esque. I mean, she's got a lot of creams and pastel colors in her palette. She is very youthful. The big sleeves, puffy sleeves, stuff like that, like I said. So
Yeah.
she goes to this, I guess because you know, like you said in the book, there's a lot of politics talking and stuff, but to get through that in the movie, she goes on land to this little island that has a wealth disparity between the very poor people that are just dying down in this pit, and then the wealthy people who can afford to live up above, just on this
Right.
random island. And she gets so upset about this that she like takes all the winnings that Duncan has won at the casino because he won the jackpot and he's super drunk, and she gives them away, but really she gives them to two of the crew members, so they steal it from her, but she's too naive to know that that's what's happening.
Yeah, it just, oh goodness, it just was.
Does that happen in the book
Yeah.
too?
It, something similar does. Like, yeah, she meets Harry Astley and he shows her basically the poor class, I believe. And I can't remember what she does. Like she gets so overwhelmed with the situation that she does bite him. I can't remember if she gives them money though. Like I don't think that part specifically happened. She does like hide money from Wedderburn to like help him because again he keeps winning, but then he also keeps playing more and losing it, and so she's like trying to help them stay afloat by like stealing some and like hiding money from him. But I don't think she does anything to give back to the poor. But she does bring it up though. Like she brings it up with Wedderburn as like she notices it and she notices her privilege. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely like one of the first references I think of the name of the movie in a sense. Like, you know, you think about the privilege that she has, the wealth disparity that she has, but also the, you know, the fact that she's kind of an invention of somebody. She, you know, there's a lot of meanings of the term poor things, you know.
Yeah, kind of with her creation and her upbringing, like there could be some downfalls to just her understanding things, you know, at the rate that she's going. Like it's all very circumstantial.
Yeah, so they leave the ship because they have to. They get kicked out because they ran out of money, and she gave away all their winnings, and the captain's like, "You gotta get the fuck out of here." So
Yeah, and kind of at this point, a pretty important plot point is that Wedderburn kind of starts to go crazy. He proposes to Bella many times. He proposes to her so many times in the book. other people propose to Bella, who just meet her
yeah.
in the book as well. And she goes, no, I am promised to another.
Uh-huh.
And so that happens. And then Wedderburn starts to, you know, get, what's the term? Like, he gets mad at her that, like, she won't accept him. And so he kind of starts to, like, play it off like, oh, well, I didn't want to marry you anyway. And
yeah, he's kind rejected. Of being, yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of, and their relationship gets really interesting because she's like, I did like you a lot once, but now I feel like those feelings are going away. Mm-hmm. And it's like, she's being very logical about it. And Wedderburn's just being a big baby about it.
Yeah. He's hilarious. He's just so wacky and dramatic.
Yeah. And it kind of starts making him go insane.
Yeah.
Because
he's obsessed with her. I mean, it makes sense that she would be somebody. She's like the, you know, manic pixie dream girl kind of person. She is like, she has no filter and she is beautiful and she's, you know, funky and just like, you know, refreshing, but she's also completely difficult. She cannot be tamed. So it's just that madness that he has to live with. When they're in Paris, he's just crying because he, you know, she got rid of all their money and they're penniless and they have to figure out what to do. And she's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go make some money somehow. And he's like, okay, have a good time. And she's wearing her like beautiful yellow raincoat that she wears a couple times in this movie. It's just amazing. And it's like a see-through yellow raincoat. It's just, it's incredible. She goes up and like talks to this little woman who is a matron,
a madame,
yeah,
basically.
A madame of like a, you know, prostitution
a whorehouse
house. And so she's like, oh, if I just go in there with this guy and let him furious jump on me, then I can get some money for that. And she's like, yeah. So she does it. And then she goes, gets like a croissant. She brings it back to Duncan. And she's like, I got this for you because I furious jump with that guy. And he gets even more upset. And she's like, well, I'm gonna go my own then.
Yeah, he really does. The book has a lot of similar themes where it's like Bella will talk about her sexcapades and people will be like, oh my God, you let them do what to you? And it's like, and there's lots of questions of like, oh, well, even Max gets a little, he's not as bad as like Wedderburn and some of the other people in the book,
mm-hmm.
Where in the movie they portray Max as like, it's like, that's okay. It's okay that you slept with a ton of people. I don't mind. Where it's like Max is kind of concerned about it in the book, and he kind of mentions that he's concerned about it, but just not to the point where Wedderburn's like, you're ruined. Like,
yeah,
stuff like that.
He's just, you know, he's a crazy dude. Like he has the notions of the day and, you know, just enough so that he can control somebody. She decides to just go and work as a prostitute in this house and really.
Yeah. She tells Wedderburn to go back to London and like leave her because she's gonna stay and make money and she's gonna learn, you know, more that she can about the ways of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she reads more books. She makes a good friend / girlfriend, Toinette, who's, you know, she learns French. And
yeah,
she just kind of has this, like...
She goes and sits in on, like a surgical seminars or
something.
Yes,
yes. She reads a lot. She's, like, becoming definitely more of an adult, more of, like, a... This is her education time. There's like a scene where she has to have sex with this guy.
So like a college student.
Yeah, like exactly. She's college. She's prostitution college. That's what she's doing. it's fantastic. She there's this one scene where she's like, there's one guy who doesn't really speak super well English, but she's like, okay, well, you tell me something about yourself and then we can have sex or something.
He speaks like Greek or something. Yeah. She's trying to make the process of prostituting like just better for everyone because mm-hmm. she's like, okay, well sometimes this isn't very enjoyable for the women.
Yeah.
And you know, the madame of the house tries to tell her like sometimes that's what men want. Like, you just, like, that's what they want. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, but why can't there be a sort of understanding? And why can't there be a sort of, like, connection there before? And so that's what her fix is to, like, tell me a childhood memory. And then I'll tell you a joke.
Yeah.
And then we'll have sex.
Yeah. Well, it makes her connect and, like, have, not, like, less stranger feeling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it, towards the end of that scene, like, it's, she has sex with this, like, dad who's teaching his two sons about sex. Yeah. And it's just hilarious. I mean, it's ridiculous, okay? These two kids are just there, and she's, like, explaining.
Taking notes.
Yeah, they're taking notes. It's just, it's over the top. It's hilarious. Does that happen in the book too? I don't know. Does it explain her sexual like partners?
Another thing that I found kind of not frustrating but just like confusing about the book is that I couldn't tell when things happened because they did talk about her living in Paris and being a prostitute for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like they talked about that, but it was very early on in the book, and so I don't know if this is like them just speaking about it in the past. Mm-hmm. like I could not tell what time we were in chronological order. Like it was a little confusing.
Okay,
so it was mentioned, but it was not mentioned in detail.
All right. That's fine. I mean, they of course are going to accentuate it. Like, of course she has her girlfriend who they become very close, and obviously she has sex with her too, because, you know, she just chases the fun stuff, right? And that is one of them.
Yeah, she chases the pleasure, and the pleasure can come from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Any gender, anyone.
She gets a letter from God, and she gets a letter from Max, and he's like, Godwin's dying.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't gone for a while, gosh. So she's like, okay, I'm gonna go back. So when she returned,
in that scene where Max was like opening up one of his bumps, like I was like, oh god, what is gonna be in here? Mm. Like I didn't want to know. Like was he experimenting on himself and yeah. like stuck something in there? Like I was expecting a spider sack to just fill open or something.
I don't even know. Yeah. It's like
a little bit of body horror in this in this movie a little bit. I was like, oh.
I know, absolutely. It's so, so crazy. Oh, like in the beginning when she's like in the lab and she goes over to that dead body on the stretcher and she like picks up its penis and then drops it.
What?
Oh, did you know?
In the beginning?
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, she's in the lab. Part? I don't know. I don't think you did. No, she's in the lab. She's talking to him about something. She wants to help. And he's like, I don't think you should help with this one, you know. You can go play with that dead body over there. And so she goes over there and she, like, picks up his penis and drops it. Like, she doesn't, you know, lift it off of his body. It's just silly. She's just like, look at this. And then she tries. It's just very...
I think I missed that part.
Oh, okay.
I did.
It's just another little, you know, little yeah. silly thing that she does. She goes yeah. back to see Godwin. And of course, like, she's a completely different person, like, than what she left.
Yeah, completely.
It's crazy. Like, it's a really good screenplay. Like, you see it in the way that she walks, she acts. I mean, it's amazing. And she's, like, more confident. She's yeah, even
and
more
it's
beautiful.
It's such a subtle change throughout the entire movie. Yeah. Like, Emma Stone does such a good job.
Oh,
like,
I know.
With like really transitioning her character at the certain points in this character's like lifespan, and it's so good. Like, she did such a good job.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, her performance is obviously nominated for Best Actress because like it is an incredible performance. Like, it's a character that is completely and wholly unique, which is just wonderful for seeing. I mean, obviously with biopics, there's at least a bit amount about the person and why that, you know, they're the ones who end up winning a lot of the times Oscars. But like, this character is fully unique, fully like brand new. And she has to take every bit of it and all the direction she can from Yorgos to make it like her own. It's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she has her kind of her, she learns her, the truth when she goes back, which is a big revelation. And then she's upset with Godwin because she didn't know that, like, she's her own daughter. And it's really,
that's right. Because Antoinette does bring up, her scar on her, or Toinette.
Yeah.
But the baby scar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The baby scar. And they're like, this looks familiar. This looks like, you know, you had a baby. Like, this is a pregnant woman's scar. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember how she learns about it in the book. I think, like, Wedderburn brings it up or something, or just, like, someone else, like, brings it up just, like, in passing. So kind of a similar vibe. But, yeah, she comes back to, like, ask Godwin about it.
Yeah, and of course she's upset because he's lied to her, and she gets over it, but, you know, it is that, like, oh, your parent just didn't tell you the whole truth because they wanted to protect you and they didn't want to let you know what really you couldn't handle it yet, right?
Yeah.
And she tells Max that she'll marry him anyway, and, you know, she's like, well, this is what I've been doing. Do you still want to get married? He's like, yeah, I do. So they go to this little church, and she's wearing, like, this, the probably the biggest sleeves, like, of the whole movie. She's wearing this wedding dress, and her face is covered by a net, like a white net.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. It's a pretty great outfit.
it's a pretty awesome wedding dress, I have to say.
Yeah.
And it gets interrupted by a Wedderburn and this person, Blessington, uh-huh. Alfie Blessington, who, which... On the ship, someone did recognize her, mm-hmm. as Victoria.
No, it was in Lisbon, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It was Lisbon. And so Alfie Blessington, her Victoria Blessington's husband, still,
mm-hmm.
Crashes the wedding because Wedderburn reached out to him and told him what happened. To you know, as much of the information he knows, which isn't everything, and he comes to crash the wedding, and he's like, "That's my wife," and they're like, "No, she's not anymore."
Yeah.
And it's this really long. So in the book, it's just this really long conversation between Blessington and Godwin and Max about, like, just is this person still Victoria, mm-hmm. or is it Bella? Like, or is this a completely different person? She's just not your wife anymore. And it's just this whole back and forth, like, discussion between these characters. And it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I mean, what makes a person, right? Is it their body? Is it their brain? And it's a combination. You know, you are your body. Your brain is your body, right? Like, you know, when people get brain injuries, sometimes their personality changes.
Yeah.
It's just a really shocking thing, but it can happen. And so, like, people turn into different people, and she's basically turned into a completely different person. She has a totally different brain, but she decides to go with him anyway, her previous husband, I guess just for the lulz. She's like, I just want to see what happens, I guess. Like,
she does. This is definitely a vibe of this movie. She's going to go try it out for the lulz.
That's exactly right. She's like, well, just it's a different experience. Like, I might as well go try it out. Quickly figures out that
I was married to this guy at one point. Maybe he's not that bad. And then we find out that he's very bad.
Well, you know, she could have taken context clues that she jumped off a bridge to not be with him anymore. So, like, I don't know. Maybe that wouldn't have been a great idea.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. In the book, she doesn't, like, go back with him and live with him in any way. I think they just kind of have these discussions. And then a scuffle does happen. Like, she does end up shooting him in the foot.
Okay.
In the book.
Yeah.
And because there's really just no way around it. The end result does not happen of him having a goat brain.
Yep.
that part does not happen. But yes, the scuffle that happens definitely happens in the book as well.
Yeah, she goes with him and immediately you're like, don't go with him. Don't do this. This man is completely deranged. He is, like,
yeah.
He is threatening all of his staff.
Servants.
Yeah.
Staff. Yeah.
With a gun all the time because they don't want to follow his directions because he's a tyrant in his own home. He's locked her in the house. She can't leave. And eventually he's like talking to a doctor and he's like, we're going to take out her clitoris so she can't feel any more pleasure and she'll be more subservient to me and everything's going to be better that way. And she's like, absolutely not. So he gives her some morphine to drink and she just throws it in his face, which is like incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
He eventually like shoots his foot, I guess, because she threw the morphine in his face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God she got out of that. I don't know how she was going to get. I mean, he was a very scary, scary actor.
He really was. This character was not good. I was definitely a little tense during this part.
Yeah.
And then does she end up marrying Max in the movie?
No.
And they kind of all live together?
I think they just have a house. Well, Godwin dies.
Yes.
And the end of the movie is just her best friend from the prostitution house comes over. Toinette.
Yeah. And the other creation.
Yeah.
Lives there still.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Prim, the lady, the
maid, who's like
the maid, yes.
No longer a maid, I guess. She's just it's just a house of women and Max. And they're just happy.
Yeah.
And it's great.
House of women and then there's Max, yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's awesome. Yeah. And she's a surgeon now. Like, she's a doctor.
Yes, she's going to school. She's currently studying to be a surgeon, be a doctor. And pretty much the same thing kind of happens in the book, I believe. Godwin does die. And I think Max ends up dying, too, because she talks about marrying multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very end, she's, like, writing a letter to her, like, just future daughter, or I think she is just like, she's not currently pregnant or anything, but I mm-hmm. think she is writing to a future something heir mm-hmm. or whatever.
Okay.
And just it's very long. It was kind of lost me here and there, but you know, she was talking about Max and I think how she was trying to nurse him, like when she was, I don't know if the book talks about her like going on to be a doctor, but she is studying to be a nurse
mm-hmm.
In the book, and I think that's kind of where it ends.
Well, I like the movie ending a lot. It was so uplifting, and you see her like reading like a really, you know, advanced like philosophy book or something in the end, and
yeah.
She just is like she's an intellectual genius kind of level person now. Like you go from all the way from baby to full grown like intellectual adult, and
yeah,
with poise and grace that she didn't have, you know, throughout most of the movie. And it's just like, it's again a great performance and just so satisfying and like the most uplifting Yorgos Lanthimos ending of a movie that I've seen. I was like, oh my God, that actually ended super well. Like, that is a happy ending.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen too much of his stuff. He did The Favorite, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The Favorite, The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I don't think I've seen The Lobster.
Yeah, you should see it. It is, it's something. It's really, yeah. Something.
I mean, if I'm the book was very interesting. I'm glad I listened to it, just in terms of like having an extra talking point during this podcast. But if I'm gonna suggest whether you do one or the other, I'm gonna recommend the movie. It was just yeah. very great to see this visually. I think Bella's growth is a lot better, kind of. Like just done in the movie, like it's very confusing a little bit in the book of like where she's at and like where we are in their timeline.
Well, glad it was such a successful adaptation and honestly such a delightful film. I think it was one of my favorite movies of this year. Like, I loved Barbie. I loved Poor Things. I think it honestly might be my favorite movie of the year. It is really fun and just exactly the weird and exactly the kind of, you know, female-centric movie that I just have always wanted to see. So, great job.
Completely. I don't know if we talked about our favorite movies of 2023. Did we?
No, but I mean, we usually talk about it during the Oscar time and, like, you know, the wrap-ups and everything. So, and speaking of, I'll just mention all the Oscars it was nominated for because it's a lot.
Do you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break. We'll do that right afterwards.
All right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, we are back. My thing is still loading. So I'm trying to do... Okay, here we go. It was nominated for, like I said, 11 Oscars. Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling. Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures Original Score. Best Picture of the Year. Best Director for Yorgos Lanthimos. Best Leading Actress, Emma Stone. Best Supporting Actor, Mark Ruffalo. Best Adapted Screenplay for Tony McNamara. Best Achievement in Cinematography. Best Achievement in Film Editing. Production Design and Costume Design. So that's a lot. And a lot of very key and important, beautiful things. We didn't get Willem Dafoe as a nomination, which people were saying possibly he would get a nomination, but really glad that Mark Ruffalo did, because it's a really great comedic performance. We got him and, of course, the other comedic performance played by Ryan Gosling this year. So it's really fun to see comedic performances in supporting roles.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, 11 nominees. That's amazing. Nominations.
Yes. I'm going to look at some of this trivia because I bet there's some fun stuff in here. Like the first one, Willem Dafoe described the makeup process 4 hours in, 2 hours out every day. I'm showing up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting in the chair, meditating, trying to deal with standing still. You can't sleep because it's intricate enough that you got to work with people applying it. It's a grind, but I liked working with the mask in there. Quite literally a mask.
Ooh. People will sleep while they're getting their makeup done.
That'd be good if you were doing a really intense makeup, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah, keep going with the trivia. My thing's still loading. I don't know what's going on.
The second one is, Yorgos Lanthimos first approached Alistair Gray about adapting the book in 2009. Gray took Lanthimos on a personal tour of Glasgow and showed Lanthimos the locations he included in the novel. Lanthimos said, he's a very lovely man. Unfortunately, he died just a couple of years before we actually made the film. But he was very special and energetic. He was 80-something when we met, and as soon as I got there, he had seen his other movie, Dogtooth, and said, I had my friend put on the DVD because I don't know how to operate these things, but I think you're a very talented young man.
Oh my goodness! Oh my gosh!
Oh, that is...
That's so sweet!
Oh
my goodness gracious. Okay.
Bella's jet black hair was an accident because she was supposed to have dark brown hair, but the colorist gave her accidentally the darkest shade. So.
Whoa. Oh, no.
I think it's great because it really makes it even more stark. Like, it's a. And her eyebrows are crazy.
Yeah, it was. It was like this. It didn't even look like Emma Stone. Like, I was like, oh my God, who is that? Like, it just. Absolutely. It's so weird.
She's, you know,
her with this dark hair.
I know that I noticed this when we watched, you know, her Oscar winning performance in La La Land, but she looks like an alien. Like, straight up, she has the features, like her eyes are huge. You know, she's got the most beautiful face for a movie, and she's a great actress. She, you know, she's almost like the kind of alien-esque that Anya Taylor-Joy is, except for her eyes are a little bit farther apart, but it's like that ethereal beauty, like that's just like it's almost like grotesque in this movie how like beautiful and like stark her features are, you know?
Yeah
it's great. I love it. Mark Ruffalo had a lot of doubts about his performance during the shoot. He often half joked that his friend Oscar Isaac, who was filming in a nearby soundstage, was going to be called to replace him. One day, Willem Dafoe pranked Ruffalo by taking him to a room where Isaac, who was in on the joke, was waiting. Isaac and Dafoe informed Ruffalo that he was fired and indeed getting replaced by Isaac.
Oh no!
Oh, what a prank. That's hilarious.
Yorgos Lanthimos wanted to evoke an old Hollywood feel by using painted sets. Mm-hmm. Most of the film was shot on a soundstage, but the ballroom scene was shot on location. Which, yeah, that looked like a place that exists.
Yeah. That was great, honestly.
Yeah,
Mark
Ruffalo really fun.
Gets into that big fight because she's like, I'm going to go off and dance with these two, and then he just punches the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's horrible. Yorgos Lanthimos wanted Mark Ruffalo to have a bird-like silhouette, specifically that of a puffed-up pigeon. The costume designers created a puffy chest piece for Ruffalo to wear, but found it was too distracting. Instead, they exaggerated his shape with large shoulder pads and a corset.
Oh, okay.
That's great. Hmm. Love that. Rami Yusuf trained with a mortician to get 1800s techniques down. That's great. I love it.
Wow. That's crazy.
He has his own show. It's called Rami. And I think he won an Emmy for it or something. Or a Golden Globe several years ago.
Yes, I remember watching like the first episode or so, and I didn't continue. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember why. I don't think it was anything to do with like me not liking the show necessarily. Maybe I just wasn't quite. I do that a lot. I'll watch the first couple episodes of something, and if I'm just not quite in the mood for it, it kind of just falls off.
Yeah. The sleeves on Bella's wedding dress were roughly a meter wide. Holy shit.
Wow.
I love that. That is so friggin' great. I love it. I'm gonna go down to the spoilers. There's only a couple here. Mark Ruffalo improvised Duncan Wedderburn's dramatic Bella cry. Oh God, he's so hilarious.
Bella.
Oh.
So funny.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to read or?
Nope, I can just do the plot keywords.
Let's do it.
All right, we've got female prostitute, female full frontal nudity, female topless nudity, scientist, and female masturbation.
Oh, God. Okay. You know, that is what this movie is about, but it's also about other stuff.
It's not the only thing that it's about.
Yeah. Okay, this movie got an 87 Metascore. With 56 positive reviews, 2 mixed, and 3 negative reviews. Wowza. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 20, 22 100s. which is a lot of 100s. I know that this movie only got an 87, but like let's just be real and say this movie got 22 100s is kind of incredible. So
yeah, because the one we just talked about, Past Lives, got what, 29?
It got mostly, yeah. It was like a 98 Metascore or something.
Yeah, well, and no negative reviews, unfortunately. That's what's really bringing this one down. But 22 100s is very good.
There's very, very good. Negatives here. We got a 30 from Vulture, a 25 from the San Francisco Chronicle, and a 25 from The Observer. Holy shit, what is wrong with this movie? I don't understand why you would give this such a low score. Emily?
Let's find out with The Observer. I hated it, but reluctantly gave it 1 star for whimsical sets and costumes. And there's a minute sprinkle of suspense while you wait for a point of view that never arrives. Oh. So that's why Rex didn't like it. I don't think you understood the plot at the point of this movie, Rex.
Oh, yikes. I mean, I'm just the next 25 says it, the verdict is sad but unavoidable. What?
That doesn't make any sense.
And the Vulture one just,
or it just doesn't mean anything. Like, what does this mean? Like, you need to like elaborate, please.
I don't understand. Poor Things is ultimately ugly spiritually and narratively, which curdles even its aesthetic splendor. Is it?
No. No, it doesn't.
Does it? No. Wow. What is so spiritually, like, are these people, like, sexually repressed or something? I don't understand why you would not enjoy it.
I don't know. You never know with some people.
This New York Times 50 says, it isn't long into Poor Things that you start to feel as if you were being bullied into admiring a movie that's so deeply self-satisfied there really isn't room for the two of you.
Wow. Wow.
Okay, that was a really great blurb. Have to give it to this person, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think I agree with that, but at least that was a funny blurb.
I mean, this movie was very stylized, which kind of comes off as like
pretentious
to some people because they just don't get it. I'm gonna bring out my movie snob here, and I'm gonna say that like people just sometimes don't get it.
This 70 from Vanity Fair is exactly what you're saying. It says, at its best, the film is indeed piercingly clever, proud of its peculiarity to a degree that's just shy of smugness. Though the 140-minute film does begin to wear out its welcome in the last third, when the jokes have mostly all been made before, and only the fresh additions are cumbersome matters of plot.
Well, and the last third isn't supposed to be full of jokes. It's like she, because again, this is very situational humor. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, it's funny because she's a child and she in a grown woman's body and she's experiencing these things for the first time. And so it's funny. But like towards the end, it becomes very reflective and like, and she's really thinking about, you know, where she wants to go with her life and what she wants to accomplish, because a big turning point in her character is that she sees all the cruel and horribleness in the world and she wants to try and fix it. Like she wants to be one of those optimistic go-getters. It's like, I'm going to fix this world. It needs changing and I'm going to be the one to change it. And everyone's like, yeah, good luck with that. Like, it's not supposed to be funny the entire time.
You tell him, Emily. You tell him.
Man, I just got really impassioned there.
I absolutely.
Wow.
Okay. That was great. Let's go up to some of these 100s because there's a lot of them and, you know, we can't handle much more negativity about this. Let's see. I'm going to read the 100 from Little White Lies. It says, Poor Things showcases the director at his most playful and comedic, weaving his otherwise evident political critique into the complex character of Bella, a new kind of woman, a tabula rasa. How pleasurable it is to witness an evolution like Bella's with wonder and admiration.
Aw, I liked that.
Yes, I love that too.
Wow. I'm gonna read the Empire 100.
Okay.
Absolutely batshit, utterly filthy, and a true original. Poor Things is as good as Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone have ever been.
Absolutely. Thank you, John Nugent. I love it.
That was good. That was amazing.
I love it because it is absolutely batshit as well.
I like the Roger Ebert one too.
Okay.
Because it brings up Barbie.
That. Yeah.
Okay. It's as if Barbie were actually about weird Barbie, but even that idea doesn't quite do it justice. A more apt description, it's the best movie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Ay.
Ay, that is fantastic. I love it. I love it. That's honestly probably why it's my favorite one of the year right now. So, oh, because it was freaking great. It was so original. I loved it.
It was life-changing. Like, yeah. I know a lot of people had, like, that life-changing moment with Barbie, and I admit it was very good and I really enjoyed it, but, mm-hmm. like, I just feel like I had a more life-changing reaction with this movie.
Oh, 100%, dude. I mean, that is so true. It's a journey that is similar to Barbie's journey in a lot of ways, but it's like a weird Barbie version, and
totally weird Barbie. Maybe I just relate more to weird Barbie, absolutely. But you know,
absolutely, that is so true. Oh my gosh,
so good,
yeah,
so good,
and girlhood in that sense of being in remembering what it's like to be a young child, remembering growing up, it is very apropos and very particular about womanhood. And that's fantastic. Like, that is like what we love to see. So, so great. So great. Okay. I don't have anything else to say. Yeah.
Amazing. And now that I finished this audiobook, I'm going to start one about murderers falling in love.
Yes. Yes, my dude.
I'm so excited. All right, well, that was Poor Things. If we didn't completely just summarize the entire movie for you.
We absolutely did. But, you know, it, go watch it.
It does not do it justice. Like, it's so good. Definitely go see it if you have not. Highly, highly recommend. We'll definitely be rooting for this movie a lot for the Oscars. Just purely based on vibes. But if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and IMDb. We are also on Amazon Music, Spotify, and Acast. If you want to email us, please do that at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com. And you could follow our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.